When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
Imagine a school day built around your child's needs and interests. It's possible with K-12. K-12 powered schools are accredited, tuition-free, online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. Students learn from state-certified teachers trained to teach online. And with the flexibility to learn wherever there's internet, it can fit into any family schedule. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. You can make the switch at any time. Go to k12.com/podcast today to learn more.
Hello, and welcome to the Yes to Life show on UK Health Radio. I'm Robin Daly, and as well as being the regular host for this show, I'm also the founder of Yes to Life, the UK's integrative cancer care charity, working to bring choice into cancer care and to support a more holistic approach. Dr. William LaValle is someone who has dedicated his life to just that, working to expand the therapeutic options available for cancer and thereby to extend and improve the lives of those with cancer. Dr. LaValle is my guest today. Hi, Will, very pleased to have you back as my guest on the Yes to Life show again.
It's great to be here, Robin. Thank you for having me.
So you've developed an extraordinary service over many years based on deep researches into and understanding of the literature around a vast array of pharmaceutical and natural products in relation to cancer. So clearly none of these is the answer to cancer, but any or all of them could be a part of the answer to someone's cancer. This is the puzzle you've worked with. Would you explain?
Sure. The better understanding is now occurring because we are looking at cancer rather than just as monolithically. We get to look at and understand the composition much better of how cancer actually develops and evolves. And in general, it, as cancer progresses, the community of cells that are induced or coerced, I think of it as molecularly kidnapped by the cancer cells.
Okay. Yeah.
To support them. And there's three main big categories in addition to cancer cells and cancer stem cells. So a normal healthy cell from some form of danger changes through DNA alterations, including in the nucleus and in the mitochondria. And now that cell has been transformed. It's a transformed malignant cell. And much of the time, the internal safety mechanisms will recognize that and zoop, the cell collapses and it undergoes automatic programmed cell death, apoptosis. And once in a while, that doesn't occur and the cell persists. And if it is next to a group of or one or another of normal, healthy support cells, structural support cells, for instance, called fibroblasts, that fibroblasts are in every organ. These are cells that are automatically programmed to be able to respond to whatever organ cell type they're next to and be very supportive. So give that support and structural and administrative maintenance support, essentially saying to the local organ cell, what do you want? What do you need? And let me give it to you. Well, now we've got a cancer cell next to that. And then now the cancer cell is telling it, and it's supporting that cancer cell with structural support, extracellular matrix support. And the cancer cell also can produce molecules that induce immune system cells, certain class of immune system cells that are also forced to follow the concentration gradient of the molecules that attract them that are produced by the cancer cell. So now we have two types of very normal, healthy, good, desirable cells that are now being co-opted, kidnapped by the cancer cells into the service of the cancer cells in the local microscopic environment, which is now called the tumor microenvironment, and that it's providing structural support and immune camouflage, immune hiding from the good anti-cancer immune cells that exist fully distributed throughout the body. And when those cancer cells grow, divide, accumulate, now we get a larger number of them accumulating and now being structurally supported and immunologically camouflaged. At the center of that lump of cells is a lower oxygenation, hypoxia, and the cancer cells, because they come from healthy cells, and all healthy cells and cancer cells are always attempting to survive, to optimize their function. The cancer cells are producing now molecules to induce the growth of nearby blood vessels to provide oxygen. So now we have cancer cells and cancer stem cells. Now those are the central bad actors. And then we have these three normal, healthy, desirable, necessary classes of cells that exist throughout the body that are now co-opted by the cancer cells into this microscopic environment called the tumor microenvironment, consisting of cancer cells and cancer stem cells, tumor stromal cells for the support and the supportive cells, the immune cells, and there's many different types, tumor immune cells, and tumor vascular cells. So when we look at all of those cells together in a community of cells, there are numerous pro-cancer molecular pathway activities occurring in each of the cells and between and among each of the cells that are vulnerable to anti-cancer therapeutic intervention with repurposed drugs, drugs that are already on the market in the UK, primary care drugs or secondary care drugs, as well as natural products which go by different names in various jurisdictions, natural health products, natural product supplements, herbal medicines, or what I'll call them is repurposed drugs and natural products. And importantly, the natural products and the repurposed drugs are multi-purpose, because among those pathways of activity, the pro-cancer molecular pathway cascades, some of which are the cancer cells from adverse changes. So they're called alterations, DNA alterations, RNA alterations, protein alterations, and so on, metabolic alterations, that those present vulnerabilities that we can target with a natural product or repurposed drugs. And the repurposed drugs and natural products generally have multiple capacities to target multiple molecular sites, multiple molecular interactions. So the concept is, let's look at the tumor microenvironment and the classes of cells within it, identify the pro-cancer molecular interactions along those pro-cancer molecular pathways in and between the cells in the tumor microenvironment, and identify anti-cancer molecular interactions to counteract those pro-cancer molecular interactions, and identify natural products and repurposed drugs in addition to chemotherapy and radiation therapy and other conventional oncology therapies to counteract those pro-cancer molecular interactions with anti-cancer molecular interactions. And we have a lot of data to do that. And I'd like to at least refer folks to some of that, where they can find that data.
Fantastic. Okay, so that's what you're busy doing. So to summarize that, what we have is we've got an unusual set of processes going on, which is called cancer, which is not normally happening in our body. But once the cancer's taken hold, all these particular functions are going on, and they all require exchange of information, of molecules, what have you. And they're very particular to cancer. And therefore, they particularly make a target for something to interrupt the process of cancer. And that's what you're looking at. You're looking at, well, what's going on in this particular tumor microenvironment for this person? And how could we basically put a spanner in the works here, stop this cancer from getting the upper hand by, interrupting its fuel supplies or whatever it needs in order to proceed to grow, to take hold? And you're saying that rather than being obsessed with looking for the answer to cancer, which an awful lot of organizations are or individuals, you're going back to what we've already got. We're saying that actually there's a vast number of things which will do this job of taking the energy out of cancer in some way, somehow defeating its operation, slowing it down, reversing processes. By careful investigation, we can come up with something that will actually help an individual, maybe significantly, in getting the upper hand on their cancer. So how did I do?
Yeah, absolutely. That's great. Great summary. So the framework describing what you're encapsulating is molecular integrative oncology. And it includes at the center of it conventional oncology, which is derived from the gold standard science, the clinical trials in humans. And I strongly support and advocate for that gold standard of clinical trials in humans. And that in addition to that, if you look at the data, the way that the clinical trials in humans are obtained is they're built, if you think, I think of the gold standard clinical trials as the top of the data mountain, a very steep mountaintop. Or mountain range with many steep mountaintops, and that in the middle, in the base of the data mountain, is the science that's human and animal cancer cells in animals, and then human and animal cancer cells in test tubes called in vivo and in vitro. And there's a boundary. There is a red line boundary between the gold standard clinical trials in humans and the drugs that get approved from that, and anything that's below clinical trials in humans, which a helpful term for that is preclinical trial data set. So that terminology encompasses the in vivo, in vitro, human and animal cancer cells in animals and in test tubes. That includes literally tens of thousands of studies in the peer-reviewed biomedical literature accessible through the PubMed portal, which is widely accepted as the main scientific reference citation portal, that data is about natural products and repurposed drugs that are already available, immediately available. Now, it's important to acknowledge that the preclinical trial data set is not as certain. Statistically, some mathematical or scientific terms, statistically, study for study, you compare a clinical trial gold standard study to a preclinical trial study of any type, or even combining them, that the preclinical trial data set is statistically inferior to the clinical trial gold standard data. And that's because the clinical trials studies are very well designed. And to get a single drug approved in the U.S., for instance, to be marketed, to be approved by the FDA to be marketed for a particular anti-cancer usage or other use disease treatment, a minimum conservative estimate is in the $500 million range or more easily. So there's an enormous amount of investment put into that. And that kind of investment is not going into the preclinical trial data studies. And that does not negate the potential relevance of all of these studies when you have tens of thousands of these studies in which cancer researchers are able to take drugs that are already on the market and natural products that are already on the market and put them into the studies with the human and animal cancer cells and test tubes and in animals to understand when they apply those molecules, is the result anti-cancer or pro-cancer or no effect in cancer? And that's what they
do. UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
The station that makes you feel good.
They're not restricted into what kind of molecules they can use. So they do use the drugs that are already available on the market and a whole range of other items. And from that data, they then do it into animals. Okay, well, these look like they're potentially promising. Let's see if we can identify that there's an anti-cancer molecular interaction induced at this pro-cancer molecular site in this cancer cell type that we put into this animal, and we apply this therapeutic agent, natural product or repurposed pharmaceutical, and come up with a result. Well, it shows a strong anti-cancer or even pro-cancer or no effect in cancer. And so that data, when you look at the molecular integrative oncology, it's very focused on the central actors, which is the cancer cells and cancer stem cells. And it also opens the scope to include the tumor microenvironment cells. And looking at the pro-cancer molecular pathways in and between and among all of the cells in the tumor microenvironment, and looking at how to make logical, reasoned, rational recommendations or selections from the preclinical trial data set about how to control the progression of the cancer, including using the middle and the base of the data mountain, the preclinical trial in vivo and in vitro data set about these products that are already on the market. And to do so in a rational way, a rank order prioritized way, so that people are getting essentially what amounts to molecular network targeting of the pro-cancer molecular network activities in the tumor microenvironment with multi-targeted, multi-purpose natural products and repurposed drugs combined to counteract identifiable and relevant molecular pathways in the tumor microenvironment. So this is an emerging rationale that has been available, and it's been a lot of effort and time for the medical physician community and the other support carer community and the patients to integrate and aggregate this information. And I think we've reached that point. I think we've reached an inflection point where now it's very reasonable to further expect the medical oncology community, including the conventional medical oncology community, to seriously undertake the rationale for managing tumor microenvironment, including all of what I just spoke about, with the conventional oncology drugs, including targeted drugs and immunotherapy, about which we're doing magnificently, and expand it to at least being more willing to permit the integrative medicine physician community to greater adoption and engagement of this set of data, the preclinical trial data set, in further benefiting their patients. Absolutely, we need to have rigorous informed consent, full transparency on what we know and what we don't know, and giving the patients and their families the freedom to choose these additional options, and the physicians the rigorous scientific grounding to be able to do so with a reasoned scientific clarity and confidence.
Mm. Okay, right. I want to jump in. There's quite a few things in response to what you've been talking about. One of the things that immediately strikes me about the approach you've just described is that it's not the single magic bullet by, it's about as far as you can get from that. It's this multi-pronged attack. And the thing that everybody knows about cancer is that it's dead smart. And if you go in with any kind of magic bullet approach, it can work, but the period it works for inevitably tends to be quite short. And if you get lucky, it does the job within the time that it works. Well, okay. But if you don't, then you can forget that approach because it's had its day. So this is a very sophisticated way of approaching a very sophisticated disease, which strikes me as complete sense. The other thing I was thinking is that the sort of tabloid version of cancer that we've been sold for decades is this one where it's this sort of it starts off slow, dribbles along a little while, and then the curve of its progress gets steeper and steeper, and it just runs away, and you die. And that is the process of cancer. And unless you can chop it off dead somewhere along that curve with a nuclear option, you've had it. And I think that picture has had its day, really. I don't think cancer's really like that. Cancer is a process, and yes, it builds up. But a number of things can influence the way it builds up and how much it builds up. And this sort of additive approach of bringing in lots of different things makes complete sense when you realize that cancer as a process can level off. It can even start to go downhill. And if it starts to go downhill, well, you've still got cancer, but it's actually affecting you less and less. There can be good life going on during this whole process.
Absolutely.
And so this management of cancer is something which is relatively recent. It was treatment or death in the old days. But now it's like, well, we might be able to manage this. And that seems a fantastic development, and one in which your approach has a lot to play.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think you're spot on. The goal is control of the progression of the cancer. And I do not have any suggestion or assertion that this methodology is a guarantee of a cure. I think if someone prospectively is guaranteeing a cure across the board, I think they either don't understand the biology of cancer or they're misleading people.
Okay.
The issue here is we're looking at controlling the progression of the cancer by controlling the pro-cancer molecular network interactions in the cells in the tumor microenvironment with counteracting anti-cancer molecular interactions from multi-purpose, repurposed drugs, primary care drugs, secondary care drugs, and natural products that are targeting the molecular networks. And so the keyword term there is molecular networks, because that's how biology exists.
Right.
And the adaptation is also referred to as compensatory signaling. So I want to be very, very clear here. When there is DNA testing, genomics, or other omics scientific testing that identify alterations in someone's cancer cells in which there's a match between the alteration and one of the targeted drugs that are available, that I strongly, strongly support the use of that therapeutic because it's been so well engineered. Those drugs that are targeted drug, those targeted agents, whether they're the ones in the targeting processes, molecular pathways in the cancer cells or in the immune cells, they are so well engineered that they bind with very, very strong binding affinity. They have a robust therapeutic index, so that they're really good at anti-cancer activity. And that we want to optimize that. We want to use that. And cancer cells, as you mentioned, like healthy cells, all cells are smart. So when you block one of the pathways for those cells, which are wholly dependent on that particular pathway, and they're eliminated, great. There's a, think of it as a gradient. So some of the cells, when they engage and know and feedback, see that there's now targeting of that molecular site, they can move their signaling to different pathways. Think of a traffic pattern with now on a highway, you put a roadblock. Okay, you get a traffic jam that's causing a lot of difficulty for traffic at that site, but the traffic sooner or later is going to work its way around. That's compensatory signaling. We call that chemo resistance or some now targeted therapy resistance or immunotherapy resistance. Basically, it's compensatory signaling so that the cancer cells can continue and persist. Now, that same picture, think of the traffic pattern. There's a lot of pro-cancer molecular traffic occurring. And now you put a big, major roadblock on one of the main molecular pathways. You can think of a highway on a Google Street Map. Now you've caused that compensatory signaling to attempt to occur. And then with repurposed drugs or natural products, both, you could target this intersection and this intersection and this side road and this other feeder road. And you can target multiple molecular sites. A very big, important difference between natural products and repurposed drugs compared to the targeted agents is the targeted agents have this very robust binding affinity. They're very, very capable of a very strong therapeutic effect. The repurposed drugs in general and natural products in general, I use some non-scientific terminology. They're smaller molecules that fit loosely into this multiple different sites. The engineered targeted drugs called targeted biologics, they're so well engineered that they fit like a very precise key into a very precise lock.
Oh, sure.
And they're not going to fit over here, 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 not well. But the natural products and repurposed drugs, they're smaller and they fit, as I said, non-scientific terminology, loosely and for short duration, which is why one of the reasons is that there's a use of them more frequently. So you may need to take them two or three times a day, but also they're able to accumulate or have additive effect and even synergistic effect with other natural products and repurposed pharmaceuticals at other molecular interactions. So now when the site, the cell is trying to compensate by moving molecular traffic this way, if something's there to stop it or inhibit it, and trying to move this way, we have something there. And we do that so that it makes it more difficult for the cancer cells and the cells which they have induced into the tumor microenvironment to adapt. It makes it more difficult for them to adapt and compensate. That's the concept of controlling the progression of the cancer. Make it difficult, because we have to do it in the setting of a person whose body is being exposed to all of these molecules.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
Benefits in here, I think, is often not emphasized, is one of the benefits of the natural products is that the natural products can have anti-cancer molecular effect in the cancer cells and cancer stem cells and the other cells in the tumor microenvironment, and away from the tumor, called off-target effects, because we're seeing the tumor as target, they can have beneficial effects in the immune system, beneficial effects in their gastrointestinal system,
important.
In the central.
Yeah.
That's a great benefit that we don't emphasize as much, but that is in that preclinical trial data set, the middle and base of the data mountain. And I want to acknowledge that the medical oncology doctors are not given this information. So I understand why they're not familiar with it, because no one's teaching it to them. There is a boundary guideline. So if you think of the medical profession as a giant medical union with trades and subtrades called specialties and subspecialties, the medical oncology subspecialty, the radiation oncology subspecialty, they're taught and essentially exclusively permitted to use the gold standard clinical trials in humans and above, those drugs that are now approved for use in those particular cancer types. They can repurpose a drug that was for breast cancer, can be repurposed and used for, say, for instance, stomach cancer.
Yes.
Well, what they are not permitted to do is to cross that red line that I mentioned about the preclinical trial data set. So I, from their point of view, very understandably, they see everything below or from the middle and base of the data mountain. Understandably, they're calling it preclinical. And I suggest that that term is now outdated, because it's more accurate to call it preclinical trial, because the natural products and repurposed pharmaceuticals from the in vivo and in vitro data are already being applied in clinic through functional and integrative medicine doctors. And in particular, the focus here is molecular integrative oncology, of the use of items for control of the progression of the cancer from the preclinical trial data set. So the terminology of preclinical trial is more accurate. And that's what I suggest that everyone begin to adopt, because it's more clear for communication. And the doctors who have guidelines, the medical oncology doctors in the US and in Canada, they follow the what's called the National Comprehensive Cancer Network guidelines. I think they're actually very widely adopted across the world, and they're still called NCCN, like national, but I think they're very well known throughout the world. And that red line is relevant to acknowledge, and at the same time, it is no longer relevant to limit patients and their families and the physicians who serve them to say that only medical oncology doctors have the right to treat people for their cancer, people who are diagnosed with cancer for their cancer. Those days are over. The data, the information that's available, the science that's rational, and the access to that information now compels us to this emerging integrative approach, the molecular integrative oncology, to say, yes, you absolutely use the conventional oncology gold standard, and I strongly support it. And we need to open up that scope. We need to say, we need to target all of the cells in the tumor microenvironment, and we can still rationally use the repurposed drugs and natural products. Evaluate the drug-drug interactions. Evaluate the other medications that somebody is taking so that there's not a impersonalized treatment plan. Don't make the treatment plan the same for everybody. Make it so that there is personalization. The data supports doing so. And then the administration, the implementation of the treatment plans, evidence-supported, evidence-based recommendations. Start low, increase slowly, observe for comfortable tolerance in order to deliver this broad spectrum of overlapping therapeutic anti-cancer molecular network targeted repurposed drugs and natural products concurrently in a manner that remains comfortably well tolerated day in and day out for extended duration to control the progression of the cancer in a manner that provides significantly greater quality of life or significantly greater duration of life. That's the goal. And to do that in addition to the conventional care, essentially what we're looking at is comparison of someone's similar group. So they have the same diagnosis, same age range. They're getting the same basic conventional, all best conventional oncology care, for which we have some significantly good data about what the likelihood of outcomes are.
Yep.
And compare that to someone who is also getting all best conventional care and this additional parallel molecular integrative oncology management.
Mm.
And that's the way forward. It appears to me to be an inevitable way forward. We now have so many informational tools. The challenge now is in the medical culture, the medical
Absolutely
profession.
Agree.
That regulatory tools, and it's time to reassess that because the demand by the patients is such that the patients and their families are no longer willing to accept old, outdated boundaries that say only medical oncology doctors can only use the gold standard. They can be the ones administering the gold standard, and there are other doctors, other healthcare professionals that can also provide the preclinical trial data, molecular integrative oncology, concurrent repurposed, multipurpose drugs, and natural products. And it's now actually more than past time to engage that. And that has been done much more in the US and in Canada. I think in the UK, there's some more significantly greater work to be done with regard to this. I see in the US and in Canada, there's still some resistance among the medical oncology doctor organizations. However, the consumer, the patients, and their families are demanding it.
Yes.
And I think some clarity about what is actually scientifically rigorous, rational, the reasoning, the scientific evidence supporting directing these treatment plans, because otherwise there's some treatment plans that are provided by some that are really not so it could even be harmful.
Mm-hmm.
And so rather than the conventional community having this a resistance and bias, old school, old residual bias to now engage and say, okay, we're in a new day. And how are we going to integrate and make this reasonable and appropriate? And we have some pretty good guidelines I participated in some of that in the U.S. and in Canada, and that could be done in the U.K. I know there are some organizations, some physicians, and in addition to, and I know, Robin, you know the territory in the U.K. and in Europe that are seeking and doing this very well, and that could be doing it even more extensively when these guidelines and the requirements within the medical culture, the oncology medical culture, but also the general medical council culture that permits this emergent integration of these tools for patients and their families in a way that is reasonable, that's reasoned choice.
Absolutely right. Yeah, fantastic. Well, look, we're just about to finish. I want to just throw in a couple of thoughts in addition to what you've just been saying about this low-level trial data, which is below your red line, which is extremely important when evaluating these things. And one of those is, of course, the safety profile of an awful lot of those things down there is very, very good. Obviously, the natural products are very high, but an awful lot of the repurposed drugs also very good safety profile. All the data is known everywhere. You know, they're in common use for other diseases. So that means that in terms of something that's worth giving a go to, they're far ahead of many other things where the safety profile is much lower, where you wouldn't risk it on some rather shaky data. So that's one thing. The other thing is to say the cost of these interventions compared to the best in conventional medicine is peanuts. They're ridiculously cheap. And so those two things together make a reasoned argument, along with the science that does support them, to see if it can have a good effect on controlling cancer, in addition, as you say, to the gold standards.
Excellent.
Yeah, so I think, you know, as a package, it's a sensible, scientifically based, reasonable choice that, as you say, the consumer should have offered to them. So, yeah, I'm right with you there.
Yeah, expand just a moment on what you just said, because if we are not using the repurposed multipurpose drugs, we're wasting an enormous resource for exactly the reason you said. We have profound amount of data, voluminous data about the use of these drugs. They are generally generic. So they've been around for decades. We have very good data about dosing levels, about drug-drug interactions, about half-life, about binding affinities, about multi-targeted activities, about solubility, about bioavailability, about the way they affect drug metabolizing enzymes, the interactions among other drugs. It is an enormous amount of data. And the word off-label means changing the dosing as well as the reasoning. So it is often very reasonable to use low dosing. And when I'm developing treatment protocols, it's always initiating the repurposed drugs at their lowest dosage increment that they're manufactured with, or lower. In other words, chop in half, or go to a compounding pharmacy and make a lower dose and start low and increase slowly. And if you think about that, I think of the molecular network activity in the tumor microenvironment like a Google Street Map, and it's actually kind of in three dimensions, and you can zoom in and zoom out, and every molecular pathway is interacting with each other down the whole pathway. So every bit of traffic on the roads are interacting with each other, it's a buzz of activity. So we know where those drugs target, and that we start doing it with very low doses and then combining them, aggregating them, so that we're aiming for molecular network dependencies targeted with synergistic combinations, additive combinations, essentially causing the traffic to be different than the cancer wants it to be, and that we can do that with these drugs in a manner that remains comfortably well tolerated, which we can monitor very closely on a daily basis, that patients are keeping track of how they're feeling and what they're taking. And then the same thing is true with the natural products, that these resources, it's ignoring them at adverse harm to the patient, in my opinion.
Right.
And including them is low cost, has a very great potential, and there's a high relevant safety to adverse outcome benefit. So we're talking about therapeutic index. And so start low, increase slowly, and use these tools in a rational way, and they're available. Now, what's stopping up until now is that the concepts within the medical community is, we can't do that. We have to have clinical trials. There will not be clinical trials in this, because we're not trying to get a single drug approved to be marketed.
No.
It's not going to happen.
No, it's not going to happen. Yeah, there's a roadblock in the culture, as you say. It's set up for monolithic new blockbuster drugs, and this is just not that model. It's a good model for cancer care, a bad model for business. So what to do? We're the public, the people who have the cancer, we need to drive this forward. It's got to be good for the people with cancer. So it's a great model. And I thank you very much for explaining it today, well, in plenty of detail for everyone to understand. And let's hope we get some change of culture very soon.
Absolutely. Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you so much. All the very best to you.
Bye-bye now.
Read more about Dr. LaVallee and his work at LaValleyMDProtocols.com. That's LaValleyMDProtocols.com. Or you can find him in the Yes to Life directory. That's at yestolife.org.uk. Just click the tile that's labelled Therapies and Providers on the homepage, and then enter his name in the search box on the directory page. A reminder that it's just days until the Yes to Life annual conference in London on the 27th of September, the premier UK event for integrative cancer care, with a stellar lineup of expert speakers and an extensive exhibition of providers and resources. To find out more, and to book your place, go to yestolife.org.uk and choose upcoming events from the events menu. Thanks so much for listening today. I hope you continue to find the show useful and interesting, and that you'll be back for more next week when I introduce the next Yes to Life show here on UK Health Radio. Goodbye. Thank you.